I'm Lisa Mullins, and this is The World, a co-production of the BBC World Service, PRI, and WGBH in Boston. Neoconservative used to refer to a conservative who started life as a liberal, but neoconservatism has become shorthand for something else, an interventionist militaristic approach to preemptively dealing with threats to America. That approach came to define the Bush administration's foreign policy after 9/11, especially the decision to invade Iraq. Well, neocons have fallen out of favor, but as Arun Roth of our partner program PBS Frontline reports, they continue to influence the debate over how the U.S. exerts power in the world.
Douglas Feith was Undersecretary of Defense for Policy for President George W. Bush until August of 2005.
I'm one of the very few people who was actually an official in the administration who will, you know, admit to having been a neoconservative, at least by the original definition of the term.
The reason someone like Feith admits to being a neocon instead of proclaiming it can be boiled down to just one word: Iraq. It wasn't always that way. Immediately after 9/11, President Bush was looking for a new approach to fight what he saw as a new kind of war.
What the president saw was the necessity to do everything reasonable to prevent the next attack. And I think that was really the radical departure from past practice regarding terrorism.
Neoconservatism provided a framework for that radical departure. Preventing the next attack meant not just going after terrorists, but transforming those parts of the world that produce them, draining the swamp, as then-Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld put it. In April 2002, Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul Wolfowitz told PBS Frontline how in this wider concept of the conflict, attacking the stateless al-Qaeda was only the first objective.
A second objective is state support for terrorism. And a third is this larger connection between states that support terrorism and states that develop weapons of mass destruction.
Overthrowing Saddam happened to mesh nicely with a neocon vision of using American power to spread American ideals of democracy and open society. It was a photo negative of the old domino theory of communism. In this era, liberal democracy would spread like a virus from country to country. Of course, it didn't turn out that way with Iraq. A chaotic, bloody occupation that lasted years instead of the promised months discredited the neocons.
So the neoconservative doctrine by 2004 to 2005 looked to be in shambles.
Jacob Heilbrunn is the author of They Knew They Were Right, The Rise of the Neocons. The fall of the neocons happened quickly and dramatically. Iraq turned into a bloody quagmire. The Republicans lost big in the 2006 elections. Bush fired Rumsfeld, and Heilbrunn says the president turned away from Vice President Dick Cheney and the other hawks and neocons who wanted to attack Syria and Iran.
Condoleezza Rice and Robert Gates now became the dominant foreign policy thinkers. So you briefly had a resurrection of the older realist tradition in the Republican Party and in the presidency.
A tradition Heilbrunn has extended to the Obama administration, which kept Gates as defense secretary. But it's unlikely Heilbrunn's next book is going to be titled The Rise of the Realists. While almost all of the old neocon crew are back in the same think tanks where they spent the Clinton years, they remain influential, and they're finding new support for their worldview in current events.
But lo and behold, what's happened in the past year? You've suddenly seen the flowering of the Arab Spring and a vindication of pretty much everything that neocons had been saying about how Arabs want democracy, too. They want human rights, too.
At 41, Max Boot might be considered the next generation of neocons. He's a member of the Council on Foreign Relations, the author of The Savage Wars of Peace, and an advisor to the military. Boot thinks it's about time neoconservatism stepped out of the shadow cast by Iraq.
I think there was a taint associated with the idea of neoconservatism as a result of what happened in the case of Iraq, which I think was unfair and unwarranted, because in fact, if neoconservatism means anything, it's a devotion to our ideals and promoting those ideals in all sorts of ways, most of which are not military.
Do you think that taint has made it harder to argue for any kind of intervention at this point now?
Oddly enough, it really has not made it that much harder to argue for intervention. All you have to do is look at what happened in Libya.
In the case of Libya, President Obama overruled the realist objections of Defense Secretary Gates that an intervention was not in America's interests. The move prompted neocon pundit Bill Kristol to label Obama a born-again neocon. And Obama is hardly averse to acting unilaterally, launching more drone strikes in Pakistani territory in his first year than Bush did in his entire term. Given the current crop of Republican presidential candidates, who have all talked about the need to withdraw troops from Afghanistan and avoid nation building, one could get the idea that Obama might be the neocons' best hope. Not so fast, says Heilbrunn.
Apart from Ron Paul, I don't see a Republican candidate who has really repudiated neoconservative doctrine.
Ron Paul is, in fact, the only candidate who's talked about a complete withdrawal. The others say they would defer to the wisdom of generals on the ground, none of whom has ever asked for fewer troops. In last night's Tea Party debate, Rick Perry said we should bring our troops home, but we needed to maintain a presence in the country. The Texas governor is currently at the top of the pack, and he's been getting foreign policy tutorials from none other than Douglas Feith and Donald Rumsfeld. For Frontline and the World, I'm Arun Roth.